Coming to you from the Grey Moon Studios just outside Atlanta, Georgia, for a third season. This is Trice Talk, a conservative political and social issue podcast that's not just for conservatives. We don't try to tell you what to think. We just want to see if you're paying attention. For the next hour and a half, we hope to stimulate, motivate, aggravate, and enlighten you. Now, here's your host, a guy that's been paying attention since Ronald Reagan beat Jimmy Carter in 79, Grey Moon himself, Donald Wayne.
I am most certainly Donald Wayne, and it is most certainly a Tuesday night, January 31st, 2023. Welcome to this 290th episode of Trice Talk, coming to you from Grey Moon Studios here in wonderful, wherever it is outside of Atlanta, Georgia. Thank you very much. I hope everyone had a nice weekend this past weekend. Of course, we know that the Kansas City Chiefs and the Philadelphia Eagle fans had a wonderful weekend, as both of those teams are headed to the Super Bowl, and it's number 57 in Arizona next month. I guess I've kind of, I don't know that I've watched a Super Bowl in a few years, honestly. I used to just watch them for the commercials if the Dallas Cowboys weren't playing, but kind of fell out of that habit a few years ago. But this one should be a fairly decent Super Bowl. I mean, supposedly the odds are about even as to which team, the Eagles or the Chiefs, are going to win the whole kit and caboodle at the Super Bowl. But some sports experts give the slight edge to Philadelphia. I think it's, I'm not one of those people that do the points thing, but I think it was 1.5 points or something like that. Very, very small chance that the Eagles, overpower the Chiefs. So there you go. Being a Cowboy fan, Philadelphia is one of our enemies. So, like I said, I don't normally support the Eagles, but they do have a couple of players from Alabama on there, and Jalen Hurts being one of them. So, you know, I may watch it this year just not only to see if the commercials are any good anymore, but also to see how Jalen Hurts does in the game. So I'll guess I'm going to have to pull for Philadelphia, but, you know, don't tell anybody that, especially don't tell Dennis Lee. I don't know if it's too late to purchase tickets for the big game, but if you need the cheapest ticket you can get, well, that's going to set you back about $5,795 for the ticket. But on top of that, you have to add some fees, which, according to the site online, brings the ticket price up to $7,100. Let's round it off at $7,100 for that ticket. Doesn't even say how good a ticket it is either, but maybe this little bit of information here will kind of give you an idea what kind of seat that might be. According to, I don't know if I've got that here. Let's see. Did I even put that down? Because I looked at several things about the price of the tickets. I'll see if it's further down here. But anyway, according to sources online, it says the most expensive standard seating Super Bowl tickets, those not in the club level, nor combined with other perk packages, on Ticketmaster, are at the 50-yard line in section 108, row 2. They cost, $43,050 with fees included. So if you're really a big fan of Philadelphia or the Kansas City Chiefs, you may be willing to shell out $43,000 plus for that ticket. Of course, that doesn't cost, I mean, that includes your cost to get to Glendale, Arizona, at the games at the State Farm Stadium. I thought it said arena. Okay. Anyway, it's hard for me to believe that there are that many people that would be willing to shell out even $7,000, much less $43,000 for a ticket to this, to the Super Bowl. especially since the games rarely live up to the expectations. And I, you know, this is, what did I say, is game number 57, Super Bowl number 57. I mean, and I've been around for all 57 of those Super Bowls. In fact, I remember the first time I ever heard a Super Bowl. I was listening to it on my car radio as I washed my car, washed and waxed my car. I guess it was on a Sunday. I really don't remember, but I was off. So I'm thinking it may have been on a Sunday. But out of those 57 games, I can remember so many years when the Super Bowl game was just a bust. I mean, it just, and sometimes even the team that they picked to win that's heavily favored, the games have turned out to be a bust. So, you know, again, if you go into this as, well, it's the last game of the season. You know, the commercials are usually funny. Maybe there's some players that you want to see. Then, you know, maybe you'll get something out of it. And it's certainly is a good excuse for people to get together and drink and eat crap, right? Eat food, pizzas and nachos, tacos, all that good stuff. So, but I have to say, you know, even being a diehard Cowboy fan, even if they were playing in the Super Bowl and I had that much money that I could spend on a ticket, I just don't think I could bring myself to do it. I'm one of those people that I like the comfort of my own living room, having my kitchen just, you know, just a few feet away, low-cost snacks, anything in the world that I would possibly want to drink, a nice clean bathroom, actually several bathrooms available to me, and no lines for any of that. So, yeah, I'll stay home, even in lieu of the $7,000 ticket. It's a no-brainer for me, folks, but hey, you got the money and you got the patience and you don't mind the crowds, more power to you. One thing that I didn't have on my list here, and I was looking for some specific stuff on Twitter, and it's just a short thing. I wanted to mention it. It's a tweet by Gary D. It's at KMGGARYDE. And it's a picture of some school children. It's not very many of them, standing by some kind of antiquated, school desk. There's a kid, and it must be a very old picture because there's a kid standing in front of this group of kids. And it looks like he has overalls on, but definitely suspenders, and he's holding an American flag, and the kids are standing there with their hands over their heart. And I would assume reciting the Pledge of Allegiance. And the caption on the picture is, who is old enough to remember doing this every morning? I am. I am old enough to remember doing that, not only in elementary school, but all the way up into high school, I believe. Not only that, but we also had a beginning prayer every morning. So, you know, the first thing we would do, the first class of the morning, we would stand up and they would say the Pledge of Allegiance. Each classroom would. Every classroom had an American flag. And I don't remember if the prayer was first or came after the Pledge of Allegiance, but both were done every morning to start the school day off. Now, you know, they nixed that, I think early on into the 70s, I believe, might even been late 60s. I can't remember the atheist name. It's a woman atheist who brought a lawsuit against, I don't know, the federal government or it must have been because they banned it across the country. Anyway, there's a lot of us, especially people my age, that believe that was kind of the beginning of the disintegration of not only the classrooms in the United States, but also the disintegration of patriotism to a large degree in this country. Of course, there were other factors involved too. Vietnam did a lot to create a lot of animosity in the hearts of young men and women in the country back in those days. But I just saw that picture, and I don't ever remember dressing that way. I think that was a little bit before my time when this picture was taken, because I don't know anybody that wore suspenders to school. But anyway, it's just kind of nostalgic. And it the point I think he was making is, do we remember when school was a different experience? And maybe it wasn't a positive experience for everybody, but certainly patriotism wise, I wish we could have held on to that. So anyway, that's that picture on Twitter. So, did you see the tweet by President Biden by chance? I look for it and I couldn't find it. I saw the stories online with a picture of the tweet that he had made, but anyway, it's supposedly there was a tweet by President Biden touting an EV tax credit for Americans. He reportedly tweeted, "On my watch, the great American road trip is going to be fully electrified. And now, through a tax credit, you can get up to $7,500 on a new electric vehicle." That was in the tweet, I think. Like I say, I haven't seen the tweet, but I saw the posting of the tweet online. The hoopla seems to be over the fact that Joe Biden was pictured in a luxury electric vehicle, an $87,000 Hummer, electric Hummer, which according to Fox News is a vehicle that doesn't even qualify for the tax credit. And I kind of remember reading about the tax credit that they were going to propose for electric vehicles a few months ago. And I think there was a ceiling on that. So really, the federal government's not going to give you a tax credit to go buy a luxury electric vehicle. They want you to buy the pieces of crap, we don't have much on it, but electric motor kind of vehicles. I think that's kind of what they're wanting people to have, except people like Joe Biden and all those people in Washington, D.C. that work for the federal government, that we pay their salaries. Of course, they're going to drive the more expensive models because they will have the money, probably even get better deals somehow or another. So that was what that was about. I mean, but the funny thing is, after a lot of he got a lot of criticism over that picture of being in that Hummer. Biden is now, they posted another one with Joe Biden driving an electric Jeep, you know, a Wrangler model style Jeep. And it says that model does qualify for the tax credit. But I even think the electric Wranglers are running $50,000-$60,000, if I'm not mistaken. And I actually did look at some of those things last year. I think I did an episode in season two about electric vehicles, if I'm not mistaken. But that's been over a year. So, you know, a lot has changed in the pricing. You're actually seeing more commercials now on TV touting electric vehicles. But somebody correct me if you've seen something different. But all I see is expensive models, you know, luxury models, electric vehicles like Lincolns and Mercedes and high-end Teslas and so forth. So, you know, it's funny, and I don't know how many of those that they're advertising would actually be qualified or qualify for the tax credit, but it's just funny that that's the ones that they're concentrating on. And I read an article not too long ago saying that, well, the car manufacturers are getting more agreeable to making these electric vehicles, but they're going for the high end ones because that's where their money's going to be. So it's really going to be a smaller targeted audience than the general American public. So I'm not sure how much of a difference that's going to make on the carbon footprint if you're only producing high-end vehicles or pieces of crap electric vehicles, that, you know, the people who can afford those don't want to buy them. They don't want to have them. So I don't know. Also, I looked in the Kelley Blue Book for the some pricing suggestions for the new electric vehicles coming out in 2023. And let's see, the average EV transaction price in November 2022 was $65,041, which is almost exactly on par with the average luxury car transaction price. So, you know, I think I've told this story, a portion of this story already, but I was trying to trade vehicles last year because I was in a position where the car I had was worth a lot more than it normally would be, like most used cars were, and had low mileage and everything. But I honestly, they jacked the car prices up so much last year towards the summer that it just, even with my high value and my used vehicle, the deals didn't make sense to me. I mean, we were looking at car payments, $700, $800, $900 a month for anything that I would want. And so I didn't do anything. But that goes in line with what they're saying here about these EV, the newer EV vehicles running average around $65,000. And a lot of your cars that you wouldn't have ever thought would be $65,000 are now about that much. So if that is, if you want stuff on it, you know, if you want a stripped down model, yeah, you can get cars for $30,000 and $40,000 now, but they don't have much on it. And they're not really the kind of cars that the masses want to drive. And also with interest rates on new cars, it obviously went up drastically last year and was another reason that made the payment outlook so high. But it says with the interest rates for new vehicles at about 5.4% on a 72-month car loan, your payment will run you about $1,046 a month. And of course, that depends on your credit rating and how much money you actually put down on the vehicle. So, you know, $1,000 a month for a car payment and you're paying on it for 6 years just doesn't even make sense to me. I remember when 36 month was the average and then they bumped in with 48 months, you know, 4 years to pay off a car. And it's just gotten worse, you know, every few years after that. And it's just, you know, when my car payment exceeds what my house payment is, that's when I have to kind of rein myself in and say, it's not worth it, folks. It's not worth it. And hopefully enough people will stop buying new vehicles that's going to force them to come down. Cause that's really the only thing that made the prices go up last year, because there was such a shortage, one, of new vehicles, and there was a shortage of, since there was a shortage of new vehicles, then people weren't trading in their old vehicles. So there was a shortage on used cars and the prices of those were extremely high. And the only way to change that cycle is for people to quit buying. You know, if you just don't absolutely have to have something, if we had all just kind of wait, you know, it's going to force prices to come back down. I mean, that's the way it works in a normal cycle. The other thing, and really the segment isn't about electric vehicles, because as I've said before, I'm not an anti-electric vehicle, but I just don't think they're ready for the masses. And the public is not being told the total cost of investment in an electric vehicle. That's really what pisses me off. They make it sound like your car payment is the only thing you have to worry about. Oh, well, you get a rebate. Okay, well, that makes it a little bit better. But guess what? You're probably going to have to spend, of course, that rebate's not cash in your pocket. It's just a tax deduction, I believe. So if you haven't made enough money for that tax deduction to do any good, then you know, you're not getting that money. But even if you got the $7,500 from the federal government, for most of us, that's not going to cover the cost of putting a decent charging station at your house. You have to pay for the electrician, the charging station itself. And I know there's a varying cost of different ones. You can get some nice ones that do charging super fast, or you can get one that'll take you 3 days to charge a damn car 100%. I don't know that it takes 3 days, but it's ridiculous that there's other costs in there that the federal government doesn't tell you about. There's still a lot of negatives about owning an electric vehicle. Yeah. You know, what about those people that, after you've had that electric car for a few years and there's varying opinions about how long the car battery should last in the electric vehicles. But everything that I've read says that it could cost you anywhere from $4,000 to $20,000, depending on what kind of vehicle you have, to replace the electric car battery or batteries after the warranty runs out. But even if I eventually force myself to buy an electric vehicle because I want to, not because the federal government says I should, I'm going to hang on to one gas-powered vehicle, even though the area that we live in Georgia, we have some pretty bad storms from time to time, and tornadoes seem to, appear all around us in the springtime. But we're in a fairly moderate zone here. But there's some places in the country where frequent and lengthy power outages are just, you know, just the norm, you know, because of Mother Nature. Lots of places in Florida, experience that almost every hurricane season. We've experienced it in places around North Georgia because of winter storms in the past, or tornadoes, if you have a tornado in your area. So there's a lot of places in the country that they may do without power for two or three, maybe sometimes even a week. It depends on the severity of the storm. So what are these people going to do if you can't charge your electric vehicle for a week? Is FEMA going to come in with some portable charging stations for those people? So I'm saying we're a long way off from solving that problem to eliminating the majority of the negatives on electric car. So Joe Biden can drive around in that electric Hummer if he wants to, which, you know, he wouldn't have to pay for personally anyway. But, you know, for the rest of us, we have to live in reality. And the reality is, for the average person, the electric vehicle's not quite gotten over the hump yet. Unless you just don't go anywhere. Unless you just go back and forth to work and to the grocery store on the weekends. So, all right. So much for Joe Biden and driving an electric Hummer. Now I'm going to address one of my personal pet peeves. Well, I guess almost everything is a personal pet peeve for me, but this first subject tonight, mainly because I've just come off a personal experience with this organization that's involved in my complaint. It's the freaking United States Postal Service. Now, I know that they're the butt of many a joke and have been for years. And sometimes it's justified, and sometimes it's just, well, that's because that's an easy mark. But I grew up in an era when a majority of the postal delivery folks carried that iconic leather bag and made their rounds primarily on foot. I mean, they did have vehicles that they'd drive to an area. Of course, I grew up in Texas, and we had neighborhoods. We didn't have subdivisions like we have here in Georgia today. So, you know, but the postal the mail carriers would drive to a particular area, load their bag up, and then walk the entire neighborhoods. Now I realize there's a lot more homes, there's a lot more areas to cover today than there was back then. But over the past 60 years, they seem to be getting worse. The more technology has increased, the more advantages, the more tools they seem to have to help them do their job, it seems like the quality of the service has gotten worse. Remember that motto they used to have, neither rain or snow or sleet or hail will keep us from our rounds? Well, it doesn't even take anything like that anymore. I don't know. Maybe it's because so many people stop using the postal service for letters and stuff, because a lot of us nowadays, you know, just send people emails instead of write letters. You know, I mean, back in the old days, you didn't have a choice unless you had carrier pigeons. But even bills, you can pay almost all of your bills online. Now, I still insist on getting most of my bills by paper, because I had to make a copy anyway for my files. So if I got to make a copy and use my printer and my ink, I'm going to let the people that I'm paying money to send me a hard copy bill. But anyway, I can still pay them online. That way I don't have to lick envelopes and peel those stamps off a sheet. You know, that's very time consuming. But I'm sorry, I digress for a minute. My complaint, which furthers my dissatisfaction with the USPS, is involves one of the few things that I actually utilize them for every year. I have this one particular bill. I think I have maybe a total of three that I actually pay by mail, by mailing them a physical check. I only pay these individual companies once a year. So I just, for whatever reason, I've always kept it as a check, and always do it usually the first part of January. Well, this year I put a check in the mail on January the 12th for one of these bills that I pay by check, by mail. And I put it in the mailbox on January the 12th to this particular vendor. Of course, the vendor has contacted me a couple of times since that time. You know, after about 2 weeks went by, just to let me know they haven't received the check. Today, well, actually it was yesterday. I'm sorry. Yesterday, not that it matters to you, but notified me that they received the check in the mail. That day was number 30. That was number 19. It took 19 days, physical days, from the 12th to get to their house. It got there on the 30th, or their business. And, I mean, even if it took three, if you take out the three Sundays involved in the weekends between the time I mailed and the time he received it, that means I still had 16 working days to move that one small envelope between my house and their business location. Now, before I tell you how far that envelope traveled in those 19, or if you want to make the argument 16 days, let me say this. According to travelmath.com, the average driving time between Maine to California is 47 hours, 54 minutes, or about 2 days and an hour. And this is, okay. And then according to another site, RomeToRio.com. I don't even know why they're weighing in on that. Sounds like a foreign thing to me. But the distance is roughly 3,109 miles. Now, back to the distance traveled by my envelope and check. Would you believe that the distance from my address to the destination address is approximately 25 miles? And I've actually tacked on a few miles from there just in case you zigzag through a neighborhood. But that's at max, 25 miles. So using the estimates given by the two travel sites noted above, my envelope should have made that trip from Maine to California about 124 times in the time it took to make it from my house 25 miles away to this business. And it's here in the Atlanta area. 25 miles. I certainly could have driven the check to them in less than an hour. And along the same line, I probably could have walked the damn thing to them. And, you know, I think I also looked this up online, just an estimated time it takes to walk 25 miles. Of course, I know there's a lot of variables to that, but it says that you can do 25 miles at a relaxed pace in about 12 and a half hours or 8 hours and 20 minutes at a moderate pace. I'm probably somewhere at that relaxed pace, if not a little slower. But it's just amazing me that a business that has more than 7.3 million people on the payroll cannot figure out how to deliver mail between two houses 25 miles apart in less than 19 days or 16 days if you want to be, you know, give them a little slack. 16 days, 25 miles. You know, whether the USPS gets tax dollars to help it stay afloat depends on who you ask or what you are specifically referring to, because there's ways that the federal government is giving the United States Postal Service money or now. Let me back that up. There's a way that the taxpayers are funding the United States Postal Service that really makes them say, when you ask that question, oh no, we don't get taxpayer money to fund the business operations of USPS. Yeah. But it's clear from my browsing that the USPS seems to find taxpayer money in their bank accounts to fund some portions of their existence. I think they're using some trickery in order to confuse people so people can't say, well, I'm paying taxes to support this organization, and this is the kind of service we get. You can do your own research on that, even if it matters to you. It may not matter to you. Maybe you don't ever mail anything. And maybe I shouldn't care if only one out of the three things that I mail every year, other than maybe Christmas cards, takes so long to get to where they're intended. But it just pisses me off that we have such an inefficient machine in this country that, you know, basically was government funded up until, 1971, when I think it was when they decided they need to be self-supporting, which I don't think they ever have been, because I saw several stories where there's been times in this century that the federal government has had to give the United States Postal Service money in order just to stay afloat, or they would have gone out of business. I think that's, for me, it's typical of our federal government, period. They have so little respect for the money that that we give them, or the money that we pay them, even for their services, that this is what kind of service we end up with. And it's just a shame, because I remember the days when you could depend on the mail. Well, in fact, even some of the bills that my bank mails to my creditors, they warn me if there's certain locations, hey, you better pay this thing early, because if we have to do a physical check, you know, it may not get there on the due date. So I just think it's sad. It's just one of those many things in this country that we've allowed to get so big, and so the bureaucracy is so intertwined with other agencies in this country that it's almost useless. And it shouldn't be that way. If you ran a real business that had to support itself, it would have gone out of business years ago, which it almost has. But anyway, maybe a lot of you don't even give a crap about mailing letters, but I just think that's a point well made, that something's wrong there and nobody seems to know how to fix it or is willing to fix it. All right. And instead of complaining about an organization, I'm going to complain about an individual that through some miraculous feat has been able to keep getting reelected to her House seat since 1991. And by the way, she was around 53 when she got elected to California's 43rd congressional district seat. That may tell you who this person is. But she's that little old angry woman who every time I see her at the microphone is bashing all Republicans and especially Trump supporters. And of course, goes without saying Donald Trump. Well, she's at it again this past weekend, professing that Republicans are a threat to America. Before I play a segment of a statement she made on Saturday about GOP House members being domestic terrorists, let me play this short segment where she and Representative Jamal Bowman were commenting on the Republicans having to conduct numerous votes for McCarthy's quest for speaker earlier this month. They were criticizing. Of course, that's nothing unusual because a lot of people. Have I not mentioned who this was? Somehow or another, I left her name out of my notes here. But I'm talking about Maxine Waters, by the way, in case you haven't caught on by now. I was trying to find out why I didn't have her name up there, but let me see if I'm keyed in to play this for you. If you haven't heard it, the first clip is not quite as bad because she's sharing the microphone with Jamal Bowman, who's also a member of the House, but they're being critical, and Maxine's comments are typical for Maxine Waters. I think she comes in second.
Yes, hello everybody, and he's absolutely correct. We're on the 10th vote, and they still are chaotic. They don't know what they're doing on the opposite side, yet they're talking about one to govern. They can't govern. As a matter of fact, we have Hakeem Jeffries, who is the most highly respected member of Congress, who's now our Democratic leader, and he's getting more votes, every vote, than the opposition is getting. So I guess we're going to be hung here for a long time, but I'm prepared to stay in this fight.
We are prepared to stay, but the problem is the American people sent us here to do a job.
Absolutely.
And right now, we're not able to do that job because Republicans are more caring about theater and nonsense and the circus and not doing the work. So we are here to do the work.
We're here to do the work, but we can't be sworn in.
That's right.
Until we get a speaker. So we've been elected by the people, but we cannot do the people's business because the opposition, the Republicans, are chaotic. They don't know what they're doing, and they're literally in disarray. Mm-hmm.
Do your research, learn about Chairwoman Maxine Waters. Peace and love.
Yes, please do your research about Maxine Waters, and you'll see she's one of the most radical people there in speaking out against Republicans and certainly Donald Trump, when he was running and then when he actually became president. They're talking about Republicans don't know what they're doing. They're there to do the people's business, but they can't do it because Republicans are. They don't know what they're doing. They can't get their act together. These are people who, for the last 4 years, have not been able to do well. I have to back up because, the last 2 years they have been able to spend trillions of dollars that they've done. They've spent money they don't have, so they've been able to do that. But really, the 2 years of the last 2 years of Donald Trump's presidency, they could do nothing. They really accomplished nothing because they spent their entire time investigating Donald Trump and trying to impeach him and get him out of office. That was their sole goal when they took power in midterms of Donald Trump's presidency. And so for these people to stand up there and talk about, oh, we're here to do the people's business and we can't do it because of them, you know, it's so disingenuous, these people are. All right, so that was the first clip. Now, the second one may have a little bit of problem paying. This is the one where she actually called Republicans a domestic terrorist. This one I have to deal with a little bit of ads here. Maybe I've tried to get around them and it's not always possible. Let's see if I can. What in the world is this? Some of these are better sites than others. Some of them make you put up with this garbage. Let's see if I can do it here. I hit it.
Joining us now is former CIA officer Jason Hansen. You wanted to teach us how to get out of.
That's not it. I don't even know how that came up because it showed Maxine Waters' picture. Let's see if she shows up somewhere else. There's a picture of puppies. Somebody's eating. There's bite marks on a bar of soap. Yeah, okay, that's not the story. Well, folks, I don't know. Maybe they took it off of there because or off this particular site, but it's gone. Well, let's see who is writing this. Speaker McCarthy. It is time to remove Maxine Waters from Congress, not just committees. She's totally unhinged and pushed for assault, battery, and even worse on GOP members. It's against the rules. Maxine Waters calls key Republicans domestic terrorists an unhinged rant. But I can't. I mean, it's very short, so it's not like, you know, it's going to make your day. You probably have heard it. Now I'm looking at it, and I hit it to play it, and let's see what pops up this time. Certainly not what I want to pop up. See if I can skip that.
Loves her, and that he's going to do everything he can to protect her. It's the Marjorie Taylor Greene Republican caucus. And you heard what McCarthy said. He said he just loves her and that he's going to do everything he can to protect her. And she's saying in so many ways and words, and I own him. And so I don't expect anything from them. We're going to try to do everything that we possibly can. But I think, you know, the average American person can see what is going on. We have these right-wing conservatives who are, you know, we have domestic terrorists in the House of Representatives. These people are extremists. And so I'm not optimistic that that's the way it's going to happen until the people of this country really decide that they don't want it and they're not going to elect people who act in the fashion that they act.
Okay. Got it in there. I mean, Waters, in one respect, she singles some people out in the leadership in the Republican Party, but then she goes on to really say it's all Republicans. She's critical of the entire party, but she has been for years, so that's nothing new. But that's a new chapter. You know, have you ever paid attention really to how the rhetoric has changed since Donald Trump became president? In 2016, took office in 2017. How the rhetoric has progressed. You know, it went from being, you know, Republicans were just racist, white supremacist, and da 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 da. And then after January 6th, they've decided, oh, January 6th, 2021. If I have to clarify that for you, but now they've decided, oh, well, now we can call them terrorists. White supremacist terrorist, domestic terrorist, because they tried to overthrow the government. I mean, it's, I don't know. And there are people that believe this talk, this rhetoric. There's people Because you see it on Twitter all the time, people talking about, you know, the Republicans, you know, tried to take over the government by force and keep Donald Trump as president, despite the results of the election and so forth, all that kind of garbage crap. But, yeah, you know, I don't remember Maxine Waters. I don't remember ever hearing about her before Donald Trump was elected in 2016. It says she was in there since 1991. So that would have been after Ronald Reagan. And I mean, I paid attention to a lot of things. During the Clinton years, but I don't remember Maxine Waters being such a loudmouth. Of course, she wouldn't have had much to complain about for those 8 years that Bill Clinton was in office, but she was about the loudest voice against Trump and anyone who supported him for the entire 4 years that he was president. She talked badly about. She told people not to tolerate them. She told America that Donald Trump was not her president. Remember when the Democrats refused to go to the inauguration of Donald Trump? I mean, people want to talk about Republicans not accepting things, not accepting votes, and questioning whether votes were legal or not. But yet we had Democrats who said Donald Trump was not duly elected, that the election was not, in their mind, was not solved or not settled, that Hillary Clinton should have been elected, that Donald Trump stole it, and Democrats didn't show up for the inauguration. And Maxine Waters told people that Donald Trump was not her president. So this person to me is one of the most anti-American system people in the country. She runs her mouth constantly. And anybody who is not a Democrat or doesn't support the things that they support is an enemy to the country, an enemy to the Democrat Party. She's the one that famously said that people should get in the faces and tell Trump supporters and administration people that they are not welcome wherever you find them. You know, basically, if you see them out on the street or you see them in your businesses, or you see them in a restaurant. She mentioned specifically restaurants in one of her rants. Get in their face and tell them they're not wanted. Who says that and gets away with it? Do you think any Republican could have ever said that about anybody that maybe supported Barack Obama, or even if they said it about Joe Biden today? It would be all over the mainstream news. And many people did push back during those years. Many people did get in the faces of those who worked for and supported Donald Trump. Remember the kid that had the MAGA hat ripped off his head by that one protester before, I believe it was before the 2020 election. Yeah, I'm sure it was. He had to go to court. He had to go to court to get justice in that matter because of the things that the mainstream media wrote about this kid. I don't remember his name at the moment, but there was multiple times when people, senators and House of Representatives or people who worked in the Trump administration would be out about in town and people would confront them even when they were somewhere with their families trying to have a dinner. Or just going from point A to point B, people would approach them with their families with them and get ugly. Now, you can't say Maxine Waters caused all of that, but she was a loudmouth about it, and she's the one that said people should do that. So when you have somebody that supposedly is an important figure in a particular party in the country saying these are the things that you should do, and they hinge, they're on the verge of being violent actions towards people. If you get in somebody's face, you get in their space, that's an act of violence in my book. That's an act of violence. If you get in the face of these particular individuals' families, their wives, their children, or their husbands and their children. That's an act of violence. You don't have a right to do that. I don't care who you don't like in this country. No Republican should ever do that to a Democrat. I would be just as upset if you tell me a story along that line. But people just don't have a right. You have a right to express your opinion. You have a right to voice. But, you know, you're supposed to use a little common sense. And there's times that you just don't do it. And there's times that, especially when somebody's with their family, that you don't make them feel threatened because of your loudmouth ideals and the fact that you don't like the party that's in power. You know, back before the 2020 election, Maxine Waters was still on the warpath. This time, she told Black Americans who voted for President Trump that they will go down in history as having done the most despicable thing to their families, to their communities, and to their mothers and grandmothers if they voted for, if a Black person voted for Donald Trump. How arrogant is this woman to tell an entire population of the American of Americans that they have to vote for the person that she says they have to vote for, that she says should be the one that's elected the president of the United States. Of course, you know, we had Joe Biden saying the same damn thing. Remember when he was being interviewed, can't remember who he was talking with, but while being interviewed during the campaign, Biden told one interviewer that if you don't vote for me, then you're not really Black. You know, he's talking about the confusion of some Black voters didn't know whether or not they should vote for Trump or Biden. And he just basically said, if you don't vote for me, you're not Black. There's no way that anybody on the Donald Trump side could have said that to a group of people in this country and not had outrage. How dare somebody say, you know, if you don't do what I tell you to do, you're not who you are. That's arrogance. That's arrogance. But yet that doesn't seem to make enough people mad to make a difference in this country. You know, if people like Maxine Waters gets to decide that the Republican Party is no longer worthy of people voting for in this country, you know, that's just right on the verge of saying, you know, we need a one-party system in this country, that, you know, we don't need a second party. We don't need a second set of opinions about how this country should be run or the values that this country should have. She also said, she insisted that she hopes people won't continue to elect Republicans. I mean, that basically sounds like a crucial move towards becoming a socialist country, if you ask me. If you have one party, and that's the only one that opinions count or mean anything, and you're telling everybody else your opinion doesn't count if you differ from ours, that's socialism, communism. But it also means that at least half of the country, at least where we are right now, would not have any representation in Washington, D.C. But somehow or another, I think she'd probably be perfectly fine with that. When Maxine Waters was asked about the prospects of police reform in Congress, she called GOP members of Congress the Marjorie Taylor Greene Republican Caucus and insisted that she doesn't expect any police reform on the federal level while Republicans are in charge. Colorado, I need the water thing again. Colorado Representative Lauren Boebert. I don't know if it's Boebert or Boebert. I think it's Boebert. Responded to Waters saying, Maxine Waters says that we have House Republicans who are domestic terrorists. Interesting, as I don't remember anyone in the House who has called for more violence than Maxine Waters. And that's probably true. She's not the only one on the Democrat side in the House and even the Senate that have called for a lot of pushback against Republicans. Remember old Chuckie Schumer? He basically hinted back, when the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade last summer, that people are going to be upset and they should get in the faces, and that the justices who voted to overturn Roe v. Wade are going to be sorry. So that's an insisting that there's going to be hell to pay for doing something that we don't agree with. Of course, there's old Jerry Nadler, too, who was the House Judiciary, Judiciary Chairman for the last few years, was pushing the House to pass Domestic Terrorism Prevention Act of 2021 as being necessary to combat white supremacists in this country. It's something they talk about all the time. Everything that they say about the opposition to their policies and the things that they want to, the direction they want this country to go in, the only reason there could be opposition to that is because those people are white supremacists. Those people are domestic terrorists. Those people are racist. They're homophobic. Everything negative is what you will hear Democrats call Republicans and conservatives, anybody that doesn't agree with them on how the country should be run. You know, we're not supposed to agree on everything. And the whole way this system of government is set up in this country is so that both sides can eventually have some influence on how the country is run. But while I think you'll hear a lot of Republicans talking about how bad some of the ideas are and how terrible some of the policies are of the Democrat side, I don't think you've ever heard Republicans call Democrats, you know, terrorist. Sometimes you may, you know, they've been called racist themselves because of their racist attitude towards other people. But I used to really, really dislike Maxine Waters. I won't say hate because I don't really hate anybody. I've had some awful people in my life that I've had to spend some time around. I've had some people try to how do I want to put it politically correct? I've had some people that, you know, tried to cause me to lose my job in the past. I've had people do things against me that could have cost me money and so forth. So I've had those kind of people in my life, and I don't really hate them. I don't hate them. And so I don't hate Maxine Waters. I don't hate Democrats. I don't hate Joe Biden. I didn't hate Barack Obama. You know, people always claim that Republicans just hated Barack Obama for racial reasons, but I didn't hate Barack Obama. I just didn't agree with his policies. I don't agree generally with what Democrats want to do in this country. So I think really what my feeling is about Maxine Waters is I feel sorry for her. She's an old lady. And she must have a lot of baggage against white people out in California to continually call for the destruction of the Republican Party and basically the nullification of all those people who support the Republican Party. I mean, there's nothing unifying about Maxine Waters and anything she says. And she can't honestly believe that the majority of the people in the Republican Party are racist or white supremacists or terrorist, domestic terrorist. I honestly don't think she can, but she says those things. She says those things publicly. So I feel sorry for her because she must have had some awful experiences in her life that have hardened her heart so much. The odd thing is she's aligned with a party who was primarily responsible for a lot of the atrocities that occurred in this country for a number of years. A number of years. But that's who she's aligned herself with. And the party of Abraham Lincoln, she despises. So, I feel sorry for you, Maxine, because I don't know there's any way to heal your heart unless you think that if you get everything that you want the way you want and get rid of Republicans, that life will be wonderful in this country. I got news for you. It won't. It won't. All right, let's see. Did I have anything else? Feels like that I missed something here. Maybe not. Okay. Yeah, I was trying to keep this one a little shorter than the last one. All right. Well, I guess I did. I actually surprised myself. So that's going to do it for this episode of Trash Talk tonight. A little more water there. This heater thing. I appreciate you spending time listening to this podcast. If you did, I really would appreciate it if you would give me some feedback about some of the things that I shared with you tonight. I mean, I know maybe a lot of you don't care about Maxine Waters, or you don't care about the Postal Service, or you don't care about the fact that the federal government is trying to push people into electric cars. But, if you have some thoughts on that, I would certainly appreciate some feedback. I'll tell you in a minute how you can do that. As always, I would encourage you to do your own research on any of those issues. I do a lot of research on these, and I take a variety of comments and use a variety of articles for these things. But sometimes, I can't obviously relate the whole article to you. So I would encourage you, if you doubt me on some of these, or you think there might have been I might have put a wrong slant on it, check it out. See what you think. See how close I might have come to the actual intent of the article. If you like tonight's episode, there goes that clicking again. I can't find that clicking. I have tried everything that I know in my connections and I can't find it, but it only does it periodically. I almost think it's timed. Maybe I'll find it one of these days, but I apologize for that. If you like tonight's episode, please hit the like or follow button on your screen. And if you like Trash Talk, I would greatly appreciate your subscribing to this podcast. I know just kicking off season 3 and, got a long way to go before I get into the actual intent of this season. But, if you could kind of hang in there with me and that would be greatly appreciated, because I think as we get on into the season, when I can start utilizing all the other tools that I have. I'm hoping it's something, especially when I'm able to start doing the live podcast. I'm hoping for some good one-on-one with people, and that when that happens, I post comments on Twitter usually 2 or 3 times a day. I generally post comments on my pet issues. I do a lot of retweeting, commenting, and retweeting other people's tweets. So if you you can look for that and see, because generally there's so many things posted out there on Twitter, different comments on things. I find myself keyed into that more than just taking an issue and telling people, hey, how about this? But so if you do want to comment on any of the stuff that you hear me talk about here on this podcast, you can go to my email address is tricetalk69pts@gmail.com. That's tricetalk69pts@gmail.com. Tonight's quote, let me see if I can do the two things that while I'm doing that. We don't want that one. Aha. Tonight's quote is more of a humorous one. I didn't want to get anything real serious tonight. I try to mix it up a little bit. But it's from, well, it's actually an unknown. So it's one of those things. I come across a lot of those last season, unknown quotes. And sometimes I like them more than the ones by famous people. But this particular quote was, when tempted to fight fire with fire, remember that the fire department usually uses water. You know, it's a pun on that saying that a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, I'll fight fire with fire. You know, well, so the fire department uses water. You might want to consider that first. Okay. All right. Well, maybe that didn't go over as well as I thought it would. But so. Till next time. Please pay attention, folks. And get involved, because after all, we are the solution. See ya.